Welcome back to a Friday edition of the Young Turks, closing out a gigantic week in the news, joined by Mark Thompson.
All right.
Thank you for joining me once again.
Of course.
I like how available you've been lately.
I know, it's great. I was working nights consistently, and then I left that job because it was a grind. Mm. It's funny, by the way, when you leave a job in media, people think, oh, how could they fire you? I wasn't fired. I couldn't take the grind anymore, so I left it. I mean, it's a fine job. Somebody else is doing it quite well. But because I'm now not working nights, I can be here in the afternoon, late afternoon, Pacific time. So it's cool.
Which is cool. You get to transition into covering the political news of the day here, which lately has been a grind. So have fun with that.
There is no grind here, man. It is unbelievable what's happening in this country.
Yeah, it's my mind is being ground down. I think I'm going to take a month off soon. Anyway, I'm Johnny Rolla. Cenk Uygur is off at VidCon. This is a Friday show, which means generally a power panel. It will be a larger panel after the first break, I believe. We have a surprise guest who's going to be joining us. But before then, we got a couple of stories we do want to cover, including this first one, which I've been very much looking forward to. Donald Trump has made repeated claims since the election about his ability and record on pressuring US companies to keep jobs here in the US, to not allow them to move those jobs abroad. And in a couple of high profile cases, he's gotten an incredible amount of credit given to him for these victories of his. And so I thought, why don't we go back, why don't we update on a couple of those cases and see if he deserves the credit he got. So first of all, you've probably heard of Carrier, because of how good their air conditions are. No, it's because of the debate about the jobs. It went on for months, and so we've got a little montage of some of Trump's statements about Carrier pressuring them to keep jobs here.
If I were in office right now, Carrier would not be leaving Indiana, that I can tell you.
We're saving the jobs at the Carrier plant from going to Mexico, 1,100 jobs.
Within 24 hours, I'll get a call, the head of Carrier, and he'll say, Mr. President, we've decided to stay in the United States. All right, this is what's gonna happen.
These companies aren't gonna be leaving anymore. They're not gonna be taking people's hearts out. They're not going to be announcing, like they did at Carrier, that they're closing up and they're moving to Mexico, over 1,100 jobs. And by the way, that number is going to go up very substantially.
So big talk there. They're not going to move the jobs they've said they're going to. In fact, there's going to be even more jobs soon. And that was in advance of him negotiating with them, which he did. He ended up giving them, despite the fact that he attacked people who use incentives to keep jobs in the US, decided to give them $7 million in tax breaks to not move those jobs overseas. Additionally, got them to say that they would invest $16 million into that plant, which it turned out a month later, they decided to invest in automation instead.
Yeah, they talked about upgrading like the plant. Opposite. They upgraded it by essentially eliminating a bunch of jobs, making it such that we wouldn't need workers.
Exactly. But okay, fine. It looks like generally he succeeded then. In fact, he put out a tweet saying, big day on Thursday for Indiana and the great workers of that wonderful state. We will keep our companies and jobs in the US. Thanks, Carrier. And that was met with so much praise in the media and amongst his supporters for keeping those jobs. Look, he's keeping his promises. Except not so much. News broke this week, Carrier is laying off more than 600 employees from its Indianapolis plant next month, the same plant Trump vowed to keep on American soil. Those jobs will in fact go to Mexico. So of course, look, the greatest tragedy is for those 600 plus families who are going to be affected by this. But the country as a whole has been swindled. This was the example of his negotiating ability. And look, I know everybody wants to see the jobs kept, and so there's this desire. We're primed to want to give him credit for doing this. And so a lot of people were very excited. In fact, I don't think anybody predicted that it wouldn't work out the way Trump said, except for this guy. The company originally put more than 2,000 jobs at risk, 1,400 at an Indianapolis plant and 700 at a Huntington plant owned by Carrier's parent company, United Technologies. Fewer than 1,000 will remain even after the deal. So already less than 50% of those who are going to go are supposedly going to stay. That is best case scenario. Now, I don't know that we will see what ends up happening, that it will be reported in the media or that we'll even notice. I guarantee far fewer will actually end up staying here. It's all well and good on day one of some supposed deal to say almost 1,000 jobs were saved. We've covered a lot of companies and we know the sort of shenanigans they get up to. I guarantee far fewer jobs will actually be saved. That guy is normally a moron. but he was right in this particular case.
Unreal. And by the way,
and sadly, because those jobs, think of the families.
Yeah.
So excited when the jobs are going to stay.
No, I mean, and they wrap themselves around that dream and that promise. And you could see, glad we showed all the clips of Trump, because when he speaks in that populist way, you can see that hungry Americans, that is saying hungry Americans in the sense that they want economic development, they want economic dynamics that they're not experiencing right now. They feel, wow, this is finally the guy. This is our champion. That's why that Carrier message that he stumped all through the campaign was so powerful. But then, as was pointed out by Johnny, by the way, that was a clip from November. And already you can see those months have taken such a toll on, on John. He looks so much older.
You can't see my mental health,
but
it's not good.
But we said at the time, I mean, you were so smart to actually predict that it was essentially bankrupt of any legitimacy. But we said at the time that we were essentially bribing corporations to stay in this country. Yeah. That's if they actually had stayed here. As it turns out now, they are moving a bunch of jobs to Mexico. But what that also did was sort of set up a precedent, which is, hey, Mr. President, we're going to move unless you could help me out with some taxpayer dollars to keep us in this country. So even on its face, on the merits, were it actually going to happen, which it didn't, it was still a bad idea.
Yeah, a guy who's supposed to know how to negotiate and how business works. I mean, I don't know the first thing about business, but as soon as he made this deal, it's like, if I had a company, I would threaten to go to Mexico. That's obviously what you should do. But look, maybe we're being unfair, focusing just on Carrier, maybe, you know, unforeseen circumstances, all of that. So there were other companies that he successfully pressured to keep their jobs here. At one point, there was concerns about Boeing cutting a bunch of jobs. So back in the day, Donald Trump tweeted this, going to Charleston, South Carolina, in order to spend time with Boeing and talk jobs, looking forward to it. And so he goes and he gives this big speech from one of the Boeing plants. Here's a quote from that speech. Jobs is one of the primary reasons I'm standing here today as your president, and I will never, ever disappoint you. He also said there would be a very substantial price to pay for companies who fire their employees and move their facilities overseas. Unfortunately, news broke this week. Boeing confirmed to CNN that it's laying off roughly 200 employees from that same plant that he gave that speech at. So I guess we will find out what those very substantial prices to pay will be.
And again, this speaks to the bankruptcy, and I use that word deliberately, of Donald Trump's message. There is nothing to it. It is a bunch of promises, and he makes them to people who are desperate to believe in a promise, and then he doesn't deliver on anything. He's not a good businessman. See the reference bankruptcy. The guy has had, you know, more bankruptcies, I'm sure, than a lot of people have had overdraws on their checking account. I mean, this guy is a horrible businessman, but what he does so effectively is he messages.
Yeah.
And in those stump speeches, he makes those promises and you want to believe them. Everyone wants to believe them. And they're carried by mainstream media and we parse them here on the Turks as best we can. But the truth is a lot of faith was put in just these messages, which are, as I say, completely bankrupt of any legitimacy.
Yeah, you're right. So I watched his speech, one of the speeches about Carrier, and it wasn't included in that montage we showed you. But he said at one point, as a businessman for years, I was just, I take. Now I'm going to take for you, which sounds great. It's a great line, but he's taking from you. Look at the Senate healthcare bill, which we're going to break down a little bit later on some more. He's not taking for you. He's giving to the companies, and then the companies will take your jobs away. Anyway.
And by the way, just to say that is exactly right. I'm glad you made that point because you heard before the election from those who wanted to believe in Donald Trump. And for those, some of whom were not in such bad economic straits, hey, it's about time we get a businessman in there who can really lean in for America and negotiate good deals for America. Well, they were essentially just regurgitating what he was saying on the stump. I'm going to make great deals for America. But the truth is he's not a great deal maker. And we've seen that in business and now we're seeing it played out here. He's a total counterfeit. And he's an incompetent to boot, but we're seeing now prima facie evidence of that in the case of Boeing, Carrier, and as John says, so on.
Yeah, and let's break down one more area because we had an interesting contrast over the past decade plus in how the two different sides dealt with the automobile manufacturers. And so back in the Great Recession, there were a couple of car companies which are doing incredibly poorly. They had been for a number of years, but things looked like they were going to go really bad and there might be some bankruptcies. Some of the classic American car manufacturers might go under. And under Barack Obama, we decided to bail them out, do this massive investment that they eventually paid back. And for some reason at the time, a lot of Republicans attacked him for saving those classic US jobs, even after it was paid back. They still said it was a bad idea. This was an issue that came up during the last campaign. So they didn't like that. And so then when it looked like Ford, you know, under Trump was gonna move a bunch of jobs overseas, Trump once again leapt in there, used his superior negotiating skills. This is to commemorate it. He tweeted, "Big announcement by Ford today. Major investment to be made in 3 Michigan plants, car companies coming back to the US. Jobs, 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 shots, shots, shots." So look, he was successful. He once again pressured this big company to keep their jobs. Unfortunately, the joke is on him and the joke is on us, because Ford announced Tuesday it's moving production of its Focus model to China, just months after Trump pressured the company to cancel its plans to move that model to Mexico. So, I mean, I guess it worked. They didn't move to Mexico.
I mean, and look, they're moving for the same reason that Donald Trump makes his ties and makes his products overseas, because the price of labor is so much cheaper. You just can't compete with that overseas labor market. And so, yes, you're seeing Ford, Carrier, and the rest, Boeing. And again, they're leading a parade of companies that have already gone overseas and will continue to go overseas. It's just the labor market there.
Yeah, it's incredibly rough, and it's possibly outside, you know, of the immediate effect of any president to turn that around. There's a lot of history there. But there theoretically are, there are other moves that you could make. You could push for trade deals that increase the negotiating ability and the wages of workers overseas, try to improve their standard of living, making the comparative advantage of moving overseas less significant. There's a lot of stuff that you can do. And Trump said during the campaign that he'd be different than the stereotypical Republicans, but he's not. You give the companies these massive tax breaks to stay, they leave, but they keep the tax breaks. It's just handing over these huge sums of money to companies. That's what we've seen under Republicans for literally decades.
Yeah,
and that's what we get under Trump.
He is hitting the jobs thing so effectively, but even at the time when we mentioned here on the Turks, the greatest threat to American jobs is automation. Automation is by far a greater threat than any sort of problem with immigrants coming over the border. And that's just BS. I mean, in relation to the real threat to American jobs across the board, automation is a much greater threat.
Yeah. And by the way, look, I know to some extent, for those of you who are big progressives and didn't ever like Trump, this isn't going to be a huge surprise to you. I get that. And you shouldn't just be mad at Trump. You can also be mad at these companies, by the way, because Trump didn't just lie. They lied to you as well and will continue to do so. But this is more for those who are possibly like find Trump to be interesting or like seeing something different in the White House. You're not getting something different. You're getting lies. They just happen to have orange hair this time around. And I want you to be on the lookout, because the reason we focus on these 3 case studies is that there will be more. The next time he gets Lockheed Martin to supposedly make some sort of big investment that they already announced 3 years ago they were going to make, people are going to be ready to give him credit. But I want you to be armed with the knowledge to know that he lies about the process as it's ongoing. And as soon as the spotlight is off, very often those jobs don't actually materialize. Anyway, let's move on to something slightly different. Got a little bit of fun video for you. Donald Trump apparently hasn't yet realized since yesterday that when he admits to lying about secretly recording conversations with James Comey, that could cause legal problems for him. In fact, as of right now, he's still enthusiastically talking about this strategy and why it was so smart. He chose to do this on video with his favorite friendly news outlet, Fox and Friends. And you're going to see a difficult to decipher answer that could cause him legal trouble in this video.
Big news today. You said you didn't tape James Comey. Do you want to explain that? Why did you want him to believe that you possibly did that?
Well, I didn't tape him. You never know what's happening when you see that the Obama administration, and perhaps longer than that, was doing all of this unmasking and surveillance. And you read all about it, and I've been reading about it for the last couple of months about the seriousness of the and horrible situation with surveillance all over the place. And you've been hearing the word unmasking, a word you probably never heard before. So you never know what's out there. But I didn't tape, and I don't have any tape, and I didn't tape. But when he found out that that there may be tapes out there, whether it's governmental tapes or anything else, and who knows, I think his story may have changed. I mean, you'll have to take a look at that. because then he has to tell what actually took place at the events. And my story didn't change. My story was always a straight story. My story was always the truth. But you'll have to determine for yourself whether or not his story changed. But I did not tape.
This just in, his story didn't change.
His story didn't change. I didn't tape, and I didn't have tapes, and I didn't tape. And then he just kept saying tape until Melania pinched him briefly. And then he's like, oh, okay. Yeah, so he kept saying that he didn't tape. And theoretically, like we broke down yesterday, he could have recorded the conversations, but be wording it very carefully that he didn't press the button, that it wasn't a tape, it was on a CD. I mean, that sort of thing theoretically could still be the case.
By the way, as I stated emphatically at this desk a few weeks ago, we knew he didn't tape it. We discussed it. Mm-hmm. You don't ask everybody to leave the room and then roll tape or any sort of recording device on the conversation you're going to have with anyone, in this case, James Comey. So it made no sense, but it was this great, again, smoke bomb that he threw to the press, and they all scurried. And
yeah, the thing in this particular case is it's not just a smoke bomb. I think it's an incendiary bomb, and he threw it in his own room, because you don't get to say, oh, well, maybe I was secretly taping this guy who's going to be involved in a court case against me. I didn't. I mean, that's tampering with a witness. That's theoretically trying to intimidate a witness. Even if he never did it, there didn't have to be anything true about it. This could come up in Mueller's case against him eventually.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I see it and the landscape of things that could come up in Mueller's case against him as not that big a deal. But of course,
you might be right there.
But on the merits, you're probably right, which is that it nonetheless represents stepping out of bounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And he really thinks that he's come up with something smart there. I mean, look, he's got the most friendly person asking that question possible. And we'll break down a little bit more about that in a minute.
Well, you're not kidding.
But he's come up with this storyline. First of all, and my story never changed, and I was told a straight story. You just admitted you were lying. The reason you're speaking is because a question about your lie was given to you. You can't say that you were being straight. You weren't being straight. You weren't telling the truth. But also, I'm trying not to be fair, because I said after the inauguration I would not be fair to him, but I'm trying to work through what he said. His new theory is that I will say I just wanted him to be honest, and he wasn't being honest, but then eventually he was honest. But there's two problems with that. The period before his supposed changeover to being honest, what is the difference in Comey's story that supposedly happened? I don't know what that's supposed to be.
Exactly, there's none.
And then the second part is, and look, then in the end, I made him honest. Okay, let's say that you're right. In his honest testimony, he said that you tried to manipulate him and tried to manipulate the investigation. You're proving he was honest. He said damning things about you, you moron.
Yeah, and of course, we know what he means. He's referring to the one part of what Comey said that referred to him not being under investigation, right? But he doesn't bother to make that distinction. So what John says has truth here, in that he sort of made this comment that would suggest that, well, in other words, all those damning things that Comey said about you, they were true. And of course, the Fox News person would never follow up that way. She's just she's a potted plant with a microphone.
Yeah, and look, what's ironic is you're totally right. All he wants is for them to come out and say that he's not under investigation. And he's willing to do almost anything to get that. In fact, he's willing to do things that will result in him being put under investigation to get them to say he's not under investigation. And that's our president. As we said, obviously Donald Trump was receiving a very friendly interview by Fox and Friends. We should have expected that. But now that interview is actually being attacked, not just by us, but by others in the media. You're going to see an example of it right here.
I did not tape.
It was a smart way to make sure he stayed honest in those hearings.
Well, it wasn't very stupid, I can tell you that. He did admit that what I said was right. And if you look further back before he heard about that, I think maybe he wasn't admitting that. So you'll have to do a little investigative reporting.
Well, let's set aside the tough probing questions on state TV there.
State TV, no. And he's not the only person that referred to them in that particular way.
That was a pretty smart, handsome thing you did there, Mr. President.
That was a smart, big-handed way to deal with that situation. There.
I can't disagree with you there. Fill in the blank, whatever your name is, Fox person.
Yeah, I don't think that he knows. By the way, we didn't mention it in the past one, but when he said, "You hear all about this the surveillance that's going on, the unmasking—a word you've probably never heard of before." That's just him admitting he had never heard of it before. Like, why would you assume that a reporter hadn't heard that before, you dummy? But anyway, it's a big charge to levy to call them state TV. And state TV in various dictatorial regimes is responsible for a lot of bad stuff going on beyond just propaganda, theoretically. So let's not rush into it. Jared Jackson has put together a montage from that interview. We will see if John King had a point.
They put everything into it. They had every consultant. They had agencies, advertising agencies.
Hollywood.
I mean, think of it. Hollywood came out.
Give him a chance. You know, let's all. Right. People are now. It's backfiring on the Democrats because they're saying, just give him a chance. All the nasty rhetoric, all the collusion, all the corruption that hasn't been proven, all the leaks. Just give him a chance.
You know? What are Democrats saying? They're just trashing it. They're saying that people are going to die if this becomes law. But what they're not doing is they're not saying, here's how we would fix Obamacare.
Right.
Because Obamacare is failing, as the president says.
Boy, would the people love to see two parties getting together and coming up with the perfect health care plan.
That'd be refreshing if we could all come together.
It'd be so nice.
I know.
Now, the president of the United States was elected president last November. Because of his negotiating skills.
And that's because he's a smart man. I mean, you know, he's the outsider who won the presidency.
They wanted to see, does the American public still support him? And clearly they do.
They do. Charles? They do.
Yeah.
As the Democrats push this Russia thing, people in America feel that message is bad for America.
You know, I was happy about the fact that Americans are normal. I was starting to worry that with everyone, you know, yelling crazy stuff about the president and blowing up the White House, all that stuff, I said, you know what, I wonder if America is the same as it was when I was growing up.
And my story didn't change. My story was always a straight story. My story was always the truth. But you'll have to determine for yourself whether or not his story changed. But I did not take.
It was a smart way to make sure he stayed honest in those hearings.
Well, it wasn't very stupid.
It's just saying, just tell the truth. Tell the truth, because Robert Mueller never said, or James Comey had never said anything about the president not being under investigation until the president says there might be sure. tapes. And then all of a sudden the story changes and he says, you know what, I told him three times that he was not under investigation.
A tweet yesterday and some of the comments to you and saying that Donald Trump was trying to intimidate James Comey by suggesting there may be tapes. Look, this is all going to be sorted out by Robert right. Mueller, special counsel, but what's wrong with saying, hey, you better tell the truth?
And that's all the president wanted James Comey and the others to say, look, you're telling everybody else. I'm not under investigation. Right. I could get stuff done with my administration. Just tell somebody, would you?
We have been saying it from the beginning. America could care less about this. Everyone's making a big thing about Russia. They want jobs. They want health care. They want to be proud of the country. They don't want to keep hearing about how horrible the president is.
So as I pointed out when we were watching the videos before the show there, obviously Jeanine Pirro, her objective there is to cover for Trump's potential crimes, of course. But as I always point out, if you think that it's a waste of time that people are talking about Russia, I got news for you. Bigger waste of time is spending all your time talking about how other people are spending their time talking about Russia. Instead of saying, rather than talk about Russia, talk about jobs, how about you talk about jobs? Consider it. It's a possibility. You have a lot of resources.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time covering Trump's tracks. And as to state TV, they are certainly the TV of record when it comes to this administration. Right? Mm-hmm. There's no other outlet that is essentially acting as an apologist and sort of explaining away this and that, and again trying to lead the rah-rah charge for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
They've been there from the start. Although even at the beginning, and people forget, Fox News wasn't so on board with him right away.
Well, I mean, I think what's amazing about Fox and Friends is that I think they're much more in that direction than Fox is. Like, I mean, look, Sean Hannity obviously really likes Donald Trump. He spends all of his time telling people to stop talking about Russia. But The Five wasn't generally necessarily on his side. Megyn Kelly was obviously a big critic. But Fox and Friends very quickly picked him up and they have just run with it, which I'm sure is good for their careers. They get to go to the White House and everything. But they look ridiculous even compared to the rest of Fox News, which is difficult.
They do. And by the way, they do a lot of this. I think you're really right to mention they get to go to the White House, oddly, because they do it for access. You know, yeah. They have access to the Oval Office and to the president when these one-on-one interviews. I mean, they're these absurdly weak questions. I wouldn't even call them questions. I mean, really, she made two remarks there, which, you know, that bordered on, oh, you're so handsome. I mean, they really did. I mean, and yet they get access through coddling the president. And I think they know, lastly, that the president watches their show every day. Don't forget that.
Yes.
That show that we make fun of, that's the show he watches every morning.
Yeah.
So it's very important what these people... I was gonna call them trout because they all sort of swim in the same direction.
Uh-huh.
It's very important what they say every morning,
yeah.
And that's what he's having with his morning breakfast.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, look, he'll say things positive about them on Twitter, which I'm sure helps them out amongst his fans. He's watching it and he's getting his news from Ducey and friends. Like, that's like if they put up an infographic about an issue, that's what he talks about that day. It's a crazy world we've entered into. And so I guess they're making the right business decision at the very least, but probably not best for the country. Unfortunately, we have to take our first break. A couple stories we've already covered. Let us know what you think about them by tweeting us at #TYTLive. We'll be reading a few of those when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. Mark Thompson and myself, John Iderola. I'm going to read some of your tweets in a second. But I don't know, we had a poll up a few days ago. I don't know if we ever actually read the results, so I'm going to do that. This was, I believe it was Monday of this week. The question was the Virginia shooter a terrorist? Because the FBI decided there's no link to terrorism after this guy went and shot up a bunch of politicians. Yes is currently at 89.2% of the vote, but no is at 10.8%. So, I mean, look, that's a small percentage, but that is a percentage that doesn't think he qualifies as a terrorist. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. That terrorism thing is bizarre. There are going to be a lot of these one-offs and copycat situations, and I just don't know where you categorize them, I mean, appropriately.
I mean, I think that the definition that I've always had from political science is using violence. I guess you could theoretically do some stuff that doesn't actually involve harm, but the idea is to modify the policy of a country in a non-military way. You're not attacking their military, you're attacking civilians, politicians, things like that.
So
and that appeared to be his goal.
Yeah, clearly terrorism then. I think what's happening here is that people are conflating, or at least trying to make a distinction, maybe might be a better way to put it, between state-sponsored terrorism, right? And state, in this case, is ISIS, Al-Qaeda, whatever.
Or group-linked terrorism.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Maybe that's true. Maybe that's true.
Organized terror, if you want to think of it that way.
Yeah, yeah, that's possible. Okay, we have some great responses to the two stories we've covered already. Larry Vetter said, maybe Carrier's robots will buy their products. I guess robots can overheat too, I guess.
No, but exactly.
Installing AC unit.
You eliminate those employees and you eliminated people in this country to buy stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a really funny way to make a very good point.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You move the plants of your AC units and your cars to China, they start making them. You better hope that the Chinese start to be able to afford ACs in every house and everything.
Right.
So otherwise, you're in trouble. Let's see. Okay, that's pretty good too. Let's see. Politicat says this, and I like the reference. The more he clenches his fist, the more jobs will slip through his tiny fingers. It's a nice little Star Wars reference there. That's good. Gabby Morita said, man, Gabby's always on this list I get given. Fox News thinks Americans still support #LooterDonald. His approval rating is about on par with his marital success rate. It's actually pretty close, actually.
Interesting. Yeah. By the way, that's a great point because it does refer, I thought that was the wildest remark and we didn't get a chance to talk about
that's
it.
That's true.
When the judge, Gene Pirro, said, you know,
they do support him.
Yeah, they do. They do. There's no opinion poll which suggested that the bulk of Americans support him or that want to move on.
I saw that he had a 70% approval rating at that last rally he held. It's pretty good.
Only 70% at his own rally. Wow.
The media. Let's see. And finally, the Mad Lib says Trump wouldn't know a good deal if it grabbed him by the pussy.
Oh.
That's
topical.
Rough.
Topical reference.
I don't have t-shirt handing off capabilities, but if I did, you'd get one. Anyway, why don't we jump back into the news, a little update on what we were talking about yesterday. Four Republican senators announced yesterday that at least at present they could not support the Senate Republican health bill. And today we actually have a fifth. This is Dean Heller of Nevada, who had a press conference with Governor Sandoval, and he had this to say about the bill. It's not the answer, it's simply not the answer. In this form, I will not support it. Heller said he can't support a bill that, quote, takes insurance away from tens of millions of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Nevadans. And then finally, also on the insurance premiums, he says there isn't anything in this bill that would lower premiums. And as we broke down, there's a lot in there that will inevitably raise your premiums. And so at least as of right now, Heller is the number five, and that makes it that much more difficult for them to pass this.
And he's 100% right about what he says.
Yeah.
I mean, and he probably said it in a softer way than can be said. I mean, if you miss John breaking down the healthcare bill and it was just sort of a succinct summary of what the bill won't do and will do, you ought to go back and take a look at it, because I thought that was really some great work. This is a bill
that's where I disagree with you, but go on.
it will increase premiums, the caps that exist. You know some of the broad strokes anyway about this bill. We still don't have a CBO report on it, and that will come. But this bill obviously is a money grab. This is a bigger money. I wasn't a fan of Obamacare initially because I felt it was a money grab for insurance companies.
Yeah.
This is a money grab for rich people, unlike anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, and in its wake, it will leave a lot of sick and dying people, literally.
Yeah, and it's interesting how blatantly they're going after certain groups that generally in politics have a little bit more protection, like the allowing the insurance companies to jack up the rates specifically on older Americans.
I agree.
Like, older Americans are smart and vote, and so generally the politicians pay them so much deference.
That's exactly
right. In this
right.
case, it's like, imagine the ads that are going to be run when your grandma's health insurance premium theoretically goes up by 2, 3, or 5 times.
We ran that great ad that they were running. Remember the ad that we ran, the campaign ad? It might have just been a general ad about the woman going and hawking her wedding ring.
Yes.
Grandma was also in some kind of...
The father gave away his pickup truck. He sold his pickup truck to get money for the kid who's in the hospital.
Right, right. And these things literally will happen, but John is right. You know, the AARP, that is a group of people who have a serious lobbying power in Washington. Those are all senior citizens. I mean, you become AARP way before you think you should be. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, that's a constituency that has some lobbying power. So for them to be carved out specifically as people who will have premiums raised, that's amazing. And of course, it's unsustainable. So you're telling me that you're going to raise premiums on the oldest Americans who will need it, who are going to be sick and are going to be in desperate situations vis-a-vis their health. You're going to raise rates on them. It's unsustainable. You're going to lose them, in other words.
Yeah.
So it's a...
Yeah, we might unfortunately literally lose them.
Right, we'll literally lose them. And of course, and what will happen is the younger people will opt out of the whole thing. Because...
Yeah. And there's nothing in the Senate bill to require them to have the health insurance.
And that's why the sustainability becomes a question, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the AARP has already put out a press release there, of course, against this. So that's going to be consequential. And that might be one of the things that's causing Heller to think about this. Heller, by the way, is also up for re-election in 2018 in a state won by Hillary Clinton.
What a coincidence.
So that's a consideration. Now, it could be a policy thing. I mean, this is a state that has expanded Medicaid under the ACA. And so he's right. A lot of people in that state have gotten health insurance thanks to the ACA. And so that could be lost. So he's considered a moderate Republican, which means that someday he'll run as a Democrat. And so it could be that he's just being honest. But regardless of the reasons, he said he can't support a bill that takes millions off of health insurance, which is different than Ted Cruz's problem. Ted Cruz wants a little bit more leniency for the insurance companies, and they can maybe provide that, modifying the bill. But they're not going to modify the bill in a way that stops it from taking health insurance away from millions. And so Heller seems like a harder no at this point to overcome than some of the others.
This bill is going to have so much stink on it, no one's going to want to go near it, I think. And when I say no one, I mean they're not going to have, you know, And have we been wrong before about these predictions? Oh, wait. Yeah, that's right. We have been.
Yes, so. We have been. Yes, take everything we say with a grain of salt. But don't take in too many grain of salts because your health insurance isn't going to be worth much when you get older. You got to watch your diet. But yeah.
This is, but look, there are some 10-foot pole marks starting to show up on this bill. That's all I'm saying. And Heller's one of them.
Yeah, the interesting thing, and this is based off of almost no understanding about how Washington DC really works, but the more it seems unlikely for it to pass, the more reason there is for those who are sort of on the fence to come out against it. Because you don't want to be tied to this thing any more than you need to be, even short of a vote. If you weren't coming out vocally against it, you're still possibly going to be threatened by this thing. And so Heller makes that a little bit more likely, I think. One other thing I wanted to say, I tweeted about this because it struck me. It's odd that of all the things that are in this bill, obviously one of the biggest problems we have is that it's basically a gigantic tax cut disguised as a healthcare bill. And it has all these tax cuts. And so far, I don't know that I've seen Trump or McConnell or any other Republican senator ask the question, why do those tax cuts need to be in there? Like theoretically, you want to make all these other changes, health insurance. Okay, you can try to explain why that's necessary to blankety blank and blah de blah. Why are the tax cuts in there at all?
Well, that's a great point. It hasn't been mentioned.
Make them defend that. They'll defend it. They'll be fine to defend it. But make them go on the record explaining why millions should be taken off their health insurance at the same time that Sheldon Adelson gets $44 million. Like at least make them say it on video.
Yeah, the one thing that has been discussed, I mean, a lot is how this bill was crafted under sort of cover of darkness. But
yeah.
I think it's a fair point that now that we know some of the specifics about the bill, we really have given them a pass on a lot of those specifics. And that's one of them. Yeah. Why the huge tax cut?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we obviously we understand why, but
right, the whole thing's in service of the tax cut.
Exactly.
Obviously.
I would love to see them have to say that. And I don't know that we're going to get it in the actual debate because it looks like it's going to be about 10 hours. 10 hours on one of the biggest bills in years.
Insanity.
It's amazing. There were literally dozens of public hearings in the ACA. The debate went on for almost a year. All these attempts to get the Republicans involved and the different factions of the Democratic Party fighting about it. And that's obviously the cause of some of the problems that we both have on the bill. And we're going to get 10 hours. 10 hours. That is insanity. Anyway, let's turn to something else. Okay, we're actually going to take a short break before we give you an update on the condition of Congressman Scalise and also what Congress is doing to increase security after the shooting from a couple of weeks ago. We'll be back in just a few with that. I mean, politically. Welcome back, everybody.
We
have
the
special guest that I alluded to. Yeah. He was a bit later than I thought, and so I'm no longer excited to have him here. But we do have Ben Mankiewicz. He's
well,
on
then,
the show.
You're not alone. We love our Ben, though.
John, I'm in Los Angeles. I had an important lunch meeting, and I couldn't make it. What can I tell you?
Do you want to give the details, by the way?
No, the lunch meeting. No.
Not to the
no,
lunch
no, no, no.
meeting.
No, I was in Beverly Hills.
A fan of his accosted him.
I was had a good day.
Okay,
that's all right. So now it'll
now people can speculate
come
what
to
that
a
means.
Grinding halt.
Okay, yes, that grind that we were alluding to at the beginning of the show. Okay, so three more stories to get to for you, but first some tweets referring back to the health insurance debate we were just having. Daniel Perea says, if all the old people die because they don't have health insurance, they won't be around to vote the Republicans out. Which is true, but I think they also generally vote more for Republicans. So it seems a bit short-sighted on the part of the GOP.
I think we win.
Overall, just seniors?
Overall,
really?
I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, maybe we can get a fact check on that.
It's never overwhelming, but you know, one would argue we should win by more. But you know,
yeah, that's a good point. We have another Star Wars reference. This apparently is becoming a theme from Austin David Hall saying, "I find President Biff's lack of humanity disturbing." I like that. And the W Doe says, GOP to dying cancer patient, get over it, we won. I mean, I'm not saying the GOP will say that, but on Twitter, their defenders do basically speak in those terms.
Like, well, I mean, that's,
go to the charities.
That's the bottom line. I mean, it's grim, but that's exactly right, you know?
Yeah.
Especially with the limit on the amount that you can actually be insured for. You know, at end of life, the costs go crazy, right?
Yeah.
And if you've reached your cap, you're going over the edge, baby.
Those caps, man. That is, how do you, well, I was going to say, how do you go to a town hall and defend that? They're not going to.
Exactly.
Another Republican congressman yesterday announced, I'm not going to go to town halls. It's just people screaming. It's a waste of time.
Right.
Here's
those
an idea.
Those people are your constituents, asshole.
Yeah. Give them fewer reasons to scream at you, maybe. Anyway. Okay, let's jump back in the news, unless it looks like you're, I know.
I'm trying to quickly come up with it. Trump did win voters over 65.
Seniors? Yeah.
So, and maybe
that's
that happens.
Scary.
I was waiting to see what the numbers are. I think we've won them. You know, the AARP is a Democratic constituency, but but I guess older. I mean,
you'd assume maybe older people have a little bit of the problems with the dirty language, but maybe it's like the old TV shows they used to watch.
And let me say, can I say 25 seconds about it? 20? Give me. I take a 24 second.
Honestly,
shot clock.
You can say anything you want since you're never going to be on the show again. Like you can go crazy.
The messaging, because I see now that the right is responding to the hyperbolic, overreactive left about people will die. And while that's true, it does sound hyperbolic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, what is the number we're going to cut from Medicaid? $850 billion?
Oh, from the Senate?
Yeah.
It's 800 plus, yeah.
Billion or a million?
Billion.
Billion, right. Well, just the simple line of, if you're going to cut $850 billion, whether you call it a cut, whatever, $850 billion was going to be there, and then it won't be there.
Yeah.
And
what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. Right?
Well, that's we know. It. Spicer said today that the Senate healthcare bill won't have any impact on those on Medicaid.
Right. So I would just say, what do you think cutting $850 billion is going to do? We're just firing a bunch of middle managers? We're going to save it all that
Make
way?
Make it more efficient.
It's not going to be coverage we're going to cost. It's just a couple of guys in HR are going to lose their jobs.
It's like thinner doors. I don't know.
How much are they making?
Yeah. A lot of money, probably. By the way,
Ben's point, I don't think that they get to those specifics. I mean, I think that I know these specifics are out there, but I think they meaning the GOP, effectively messages. They do it so well, and I think the good guys have to get better at that.
Yeah, I agree. Well, although it'll be called hyperbolic, I loved Elizabeth Warren's comments about this bill from the Senate floor yesterday, and Bernie Sanders as well. Okay. Since the Virginia baseball field shooting, Congress has been in this debate about how exactly to address what they're seeing as this new threat to their members. You know, what sort of security should we have? And we're going to give you that update here. By the way, Scalise has apparently been moved out of the critical care portion of the hospital that he's in. So it looks like his condition continues to improve, which obviously is very good news.
That's great news.
And it was very, very scary in the early days, I'm sure, for him and his family and friends. But let's go back to security. So apparently, a number of members of Congress met with Paul Ryan, and there was this discussion about freeing up a certain amount of the campaign funds, basically the money they have allotted to them. I don't think it's specifically campaign, but it's this money that they have, their congressional allowances, to possibly allow them to use up to $25,000 of that for additional security. So at present, it doesn't look like it's new funding that they'll have, but allowing them to use their funding in a different way. As well, lawmakers exiting the meeting said that the funds would likely help lawmakers hire personal protection, especially in districts where local police aren't able to provide around-the-clock security, which is probably true for a lot of members of Congress. The funds could also be used to help members pay for alarms in their homes or panic buttons if they're ever in physical danger. No word yet on panic rooms. Now, in terms of what has actually been done, there was a $29 million bump for the Capitol Police, which obviously would directly impact the sort of attack that we saw. Additionally, members have discussed obtaining blanket waivers from the FEC, permitting members to use campaign funds for security while conducting political business. Currently, they can obtain individual waivers, but they want to free that up, make it a little bit easier in the future.
I don't mean to be skeptical, but that last thing is a big deal. When I think you're allowed that total discretion over monies that were designated for your campaign, and you can apply them to security, I just feel it's just fraught with problems in terms of that money being responsibly spent. We have enough problems with money being responsibly spent anyway in Washington, government money and money from representatives, but I think that really leaves the door open. Having said that, obviously you'd like to see some protection for these people away from the Hill. Right now they only have protection when they're there near the place of governance, if you will.
Unless they're in leadership, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, which is what was the case with that baseball field. But you know, when they're doing community theater or whatever they're doing, I mean, you know, there's nobody watching the doors. So it does seem as though something would be appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, of course, right, when you start giving blanket allowances to allow members of Congress, politicians to spend their money freely, and they could just say line item security, you know. That said, that seems to be the, you know, like, this is where we're going to draw the line on,
that's true,
on campaign finance. Like, so it seems like they need more security, and this seems like a pointless thing to argue against. Mm-hmm. Have at it. You know,
well, what I would be interested to find out is if you were to run a poll nationwide, do members of Congress have bodyguards? I think a lot of Americans, maybe the majority, would say, yeah, they have bodyguards at all times.
It's a terrible, terrible time. Everything, you know, is a terrible time. They probably do need this.
Yeah, at this time in history.
I don't argue the specifics here, except I share your concern about the blanket waivers. If they want to use their money to get security, they'll probably find out some way to be corrupt with that. It's not immediately apparent to me how that is. I would just say, if they need security, they should get security, but they don't need security because this attack just happened. I mean, there's no evidence that this attack is connected to anything broader, is indicative of any sort of new trend.
You're right.
It is an event. But, well, you know, Gabby Giffords was shot, and I believe since the beginning there have been a couple of dozen congressmen who have been shot over the couple hundred year history of our nation, which is terrible in each one of those instances, but not necessarily proof that them need security at all times. If they want to get it, I'm not saying they should.
It's just there's an ugliness to the times
that
we live in, and obviously it doesn't seem to be a big stretch that politicians are perhaps, but you're right, everything you say is true, are perhaps more in danger. I don't think GOP lawmakers are in more danger than Democratic lawmakers. All right, I would argue the opposite, but that's a silly argument to make.
Let's have it for 45 more minutes.
Right, okay. So
it's not the first silly argument we could have on this show.
That's true.
Won't be the last.
Yeah. Okay, let's mix it up a little bit. Since the inauguration, in a couple of instances, Donald Trump has faced accusations that he doesn't take anti-Semitic threats, bomb threats, and things like that seriously. And there's been some evidence. And in responding to that, it's led to statements by Donald Trump like this.
So here's the story, folks. Number one, I am the least anti-Semitic person that you've ever seen in your entire life.
That should be the end of the discussion, but we're going to have one anyway.
Not just that you know, that you've seen.
Yeah.
Right.
That you've seen.
Like on television, because most people don't know Donald Trump. So anyway.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, so he is less anti-Semitic than like Benjamin Netanyahu, who I've also seen. I've seen him. Right.
Yes, exactly.
Eli Wiesel.
Right, Eli
Wiesel. Holocaust survivor.
Yeah, but kind of hated Jews.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which, by the way,
that was
I missed a couple chapters.
The whole Holocaust hunting was designed to just throw you off.
Oh, I see. Wow, it was really worked on me.
You're gullible.
You know, just logically from his statement, it's really sad to say, but Jared and Ivanka more anti-Semitic than Donald Trump. I've seen them.
Oh, that's right.
that's terrible. Oh, Melania is more anti-Semitic. Anyway.
By the way, I literally thought you said, the reason why I hesitated on that is I thought you said Jared and Ivanka. And I was like, God damn, I hate it.
That's their celebrity name.
I'm too out of it. I don't know who this Jared and Ivanka is. I didn't read the paper enough today.
Yeah.
I have a Jared and Ivanka.
Jared and Ivanka, who is that? Yeah.
Anyway, here's why we're returning to this, though, because once again, he's opening himself up to these sorts of accusations. For more than a decade now, since 2004, the State Department has had an office that investigates anti-Semitic threats and advocates for action against it, tries to get the rest of the State Department and other government offices to take it seriously and to combat anti-Semitism. Let's talk about this office. At full staffing, the office employs a full-time envoy and the equivalent of three full-time staffers, which was great when they had those staffers. But a source familiar with the office's workings told JTA, which is a Jewish-focused media outlet, that its remaining two staffers, each working half-time or less, would be reassigned as of July 1st. Which means that this office, which has functioned for 13 years, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say does not take a very large percentage of the federal budget, is not going to have a staff as of July 1st. So why is that? Secretary of State, well, at least why they're saying it is. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told Congress in testimony earlier this month that he believes special envoys were counterproductive and that they simply provided an excuse for others in government to not deal with the issue that the special envoy dealt with. Now, disagreeing with Rex Tillerson are Jewish groups have lobbied President Donald Trump to name an envoy, saying that the position has been key to encouraging diplomats and officials throughout the government to focus on anti-Semitism. And specifically, the ADL CEO said, the idea of having a dedicated envoy who can travel around the world to raise awareness on this issue is critical. Not critical, though, to Rex Tillerson or Donald Trump.
Jewish groups, what do they know about anti-Semitism, Ben?
I mean, maybe biased.
You're telling me there's not some Goldman Sachs executive who doesn't want this job, traveling around the country talking about anti-Semitism? I mean, Trump, you make a stupid comment like that, and then we have to have a whole segment that points out, you know, the idiocy of it. You know, I don't think Donald Trump is an anti-Semite, right? Donald Trump is, but that's not the issue. The issue is, has Donald Trump winked, nodded, and given a thumbs up to serious anti-Semites here in this country? And that answer is obviously yes. And then he says something like this, and then we have to do a story about how he's dropping a job that no one knew existed, right? I mean,
those groups knew.
No, those groups knew, and it makes sense. That does seem like the kind of job that we've probably had and has probably done some good. But they don't care. He's not interested in, here's what Donald Trump is not, interested in fighting anti-Semitism. It's not on his radar. He doesn't care.
Well, he doesn't comment on it as much.
I mean, he can't open up a golf course on anti-Semitism. I mean, he needs, he's interested in those things that can enrich Donald Trump. I mean, make no mistake about it. Everything he does would seem to be in service of that. Not literally everything, I get it, but almost literally everything. But it stands to reason what Ben is saying, that this rhetoric, I mean, this toxic rhetoric, it, little by little, it creates an environment that allows for more hate. And so that wink-wink that Ben's talking about, I think, is indeed part of an overall wink-wink, which is hate speech. And it does increase the possibility of us seeing more incidents that are associated with things like anti-Semitism or hatred of any kind that can turn violent.
And it's gonna and he's speaking to the, you know, people on the alt-right and angry, disaffected people. And some of those will be on the left. I'm sure if you took a poll, we know where most of them are. Mm. But it's silly, like that debate. I don't want to get into that bait with Tommy Lahren or any of those other people. I got it. There are some loons on the left, right? Obviously, there always have been. Yeah. You know, a crazed anarchist took a shot at William McKinley, unless it was James Garfield, but I think it was a crazed anarchist. Leon Soglots, who killed William McKinley, was a crazed anarchist. Yeah. He was a leftist.
Can we go one show without bringing up Leon's, I don't know what you said.
Soglots. It's like you haven't even seen Assassins, the show.
I have not seen Assassins, the
Michael's
show.
Favorite musical, Michael Schur's favorite musical. And I think Charles Guiteau, who killed James Garfield, he was a disgruntled office seeker.
Okay, wow, that's sense very then. Strong.
And look, the thing about this story is, it's three positions in government. Just give the jobs to friends of yours.
That's right.
Fill it somebody with a couple of the shitty sons of businessmen you work with.
That's why Ben mentioned Goldman.
That's why I said Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Just give them the job. Just pretend that you care about this issue. I understand.
They probably have some Jews.
Tells me.
Based on his other nominations, the people who would take over this position wouldn't know anything about the actual issue.
That's right.
I mean, that's why he sent Jared Kushner and Greenblatt to negotiate Middle East peace, and they don't know a damn about it.
I can't believe that when this position existed during the Bush administration, that Mike Brown didn't have it.
Yeah, that's true. Similar thing back then.
Yeah,
right. But the reason that I wanted to make sure that we cover this is this is a sort of issue which is a little bit smaller, but very specific, and often gets people don't have time. There's such big issues that they have to talk about, but it's the sort of issue that we can't allow to slip by. So today this happened. Also, another one of the groups. We don't have time to do a full story, but another one of the groups that was set up under Obama to fight right-wing extremism has been defunded as of this week. They just shut it down. And this is after a report comes out that confirms what we already know, that the vast majority of violent extremists in the country are right-wingers. They just defunded another group, man. And it's not going to be front page news or anything, but it matters.
And it matters to them. They hear it. They know it. That word, whatever those dumb, whatever those stupid websites are, they're dangerous websites. I'm not just trying to diminish them by saying they're stupid, but that I'm sure, what is it, 4chan, that's a thing, right?
4chan, yeah. Right. 4chan's a diverse 4chan's thing, but it does have a section.
But there's that's whatever, the sections in that that appeal to those guys. I know the internet. where do we work?
You're a Redditor, right?
Sure, of course. AMA stands for Ask Me Anything, John.
That's true.
Believe me, the word gets out. Like, again, you're right. That story's going to get missed by the overwhelm. But they'll be like, oh, I defunded another office that was whose sole purpose was to investigate us.
That's true. And finally, I'll just say, I know that on the right continually, they love to poo-poo these concerns over anti-Semitism, even though There was a synagogue shot up literally this year. There were so many bomb threats made against those communities, which even if not a single bomb goes off, imagine what the people who go to those Jewish community centers must feel like knowing that they're being potentially targeted. And also a report came out in April showing that actual anti-Semitic violence was up, I believe, 40 to 45% year over year. And so people love to pretend that it's not an issue. It is an issue. It deserves some attention from the government.
But last point I was going to say, just to reiterate, and the dollars and cents associated with it, so small, makes no sense.
Exactly.
Two things. One, I cannot believe the guy who ran Exxon is the Secretary of State. Like, why Rex Tillerson is making this decision? He didn't want the job. He hasn't shown a propensity to be interested in those things in the world. Like, it's inexplicable.
No, he fits
and
right
we've
in.
Glossed, like, we gloss over this fact because he actually, in the list of incompetence for Trump, isn't at the top of the list, right? Because he might be a fairly bright guy, getting to be the CEO of ExxonMobil.
Yeah.
That's quite an accomplishment, right? Yeah. No matter what you think of the oil industry in general, that guy is an achiever, right? Yeah. But it's insane that he's the Secretary of State. Yeah. And we will look back 20 years from now, and that will be the most crazy cabinet appointment that Donald Trump made. That we were like, well, yeah, I guess we're going to let the guy who runs a giant oil conglomerate to take over our foreign affairs.
Because relative to the other incompetence, like Rick Perry, this guy looks like an intellectual.
Because Rick Perry is not an achiever. Because you can succeed in politics accidentally. Right, right place, right time, right hair, right glasses.
Did you see him dancing on TV?
I'm in the wrong color. I've made the wrong decision.
Hey, watch it, buddy. Right. Yeah.
And I don't remember what my other point is, but we allow so the anti-Semitism and racism and the hate speech going on around the country. There's serious issues, right? They're dangerous issues, and yet the media that we have, mostly the television media, through the way they operate, based on our need to cover both sides with what we describe as fairness, you know, to some of the most nonviolent people in the world, community theater actors, right? And Kathy Griffin, who does something distasteful in an artistic attempt gone awry and a failure. That's what we talk about as sort of, hate speech. And then we have a groups that legitimately want to kill Jews and blacks and Latinos. But on the other side, there's a Kathy Griffin who's never done anything violent in her entire life, but did something incredibly distasteful. And we equate the two. And Kellyanne Conway goes on TV and we'll mention Kathy Griffin and Julius Caesar forever, even though neither of those things should really rise to the level of actual news or actual threats, distasteful as Kathy Griffin's decision was. And idiots like me have to end every thought about Kathy Griffin by saying, and I think it was distasteful.
It was.
Which I do, right? Again, but man, that's not the issue. It is not the issue. Right.
Just look at the news coverage of Kathy Griffin versus the Portland stabbings. Actual violence based on religious hatred versus her stupid picture. Anyway, really fast, let's close out the first hour of damn, I really thought we were going to get to that. Anyway, things aren't going great at Mar-a-Lago. I was going to.
Oh, no.
He's got a couple seconds, doesn't he, or not?
No, unfortunately not.
That means.
But anyway, that does mean go. But the good news is that while I am going to be heading out, Kim Horcher is going to be joining the panel. And she's got an awesome second hour she's going to be leading you guys through. Thank you for joining me, mostly Mark Thompson, because you barely got here, you asshole. Anyway, Ben Mankiewicz. Anyway, I'm out for the week. Enjoy the rest of the show. We'll be back after this.